Good morning, Colorado. Here we go. Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. We bring the show to you to help you. You can give us a call, 303-713-8255. We're here to answer your questions on any legal subject, even though we're injury attorneys. In our day lives, our regular lives, we are injury attorneys. We represent injured victims of all kinds all over the state of Colorado. But right here on this radio, right now, we're ready to go for you on any legal subject. And Brad and I don't care what it is. It can be surveys. It can be real estate disputes, real estate contracts. It can be divorce, custody, wills, estates. We're ready to help you. And by the way, if you ask us questions that we need you to get your referral, we refer you to somebody. That's not a paid entity or enterprise for us. We just do it to help you. 303-713-8255. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. That's championsofthepeople.com. You can download free any of our books. They're e-books there. You can download them free. If you want a hard copy, all you have to do is call at the studio right here, 303-713-8255, and we'll be glad to send you a hard copy. Our books, you know, one of them's called Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. We got a couple of new books coming out shortly, but the Cowards of the Street book, the last half of that book, covers specifically insurance coverage issues with detailed narrative and detailed examples for you to follow. And you say, well, why would I want to do that? I'm not going to be in a hit and run. Well, it covers also the situation where if you're injured by another person and they have no insurance, they don't run, they're on the scene, but I'm sorry, insurance got canceled, I'm sorry. Or they give you, my favorite one or unfavorite one, they give you their insurance card, you call later and it's all been canceled. And so that book tells you exactly what to do. Also, if the at-fault party does not have enough insurance, not enough insurance, and then you're left in the cold, what to do there. Typical examples, it's easy to follow, easy to understand. And, you know, Brad and I did a show, our second part in our series that we're doing right now. It's called Back to the Basics, the ABCs of Car Accidents and Injuries. And, Brad, why don't we give them a little bit of flavor of what we're talking about on the Back to the Basics series?
Well, it's a simple process. People think lawsuits from the advertising we get that all lawsuits are millions of dollars and there's hundreds of thousands of dollars that are being given and everybody's getting $1 million for having a rear end that I guess scrapes up their car. Well, that's not what it's all about. We're trying to teach people what lawsuits are about, what's involved, what you're dealing with when you deal with the insurance companies, what you have to do from the very beginning all the way through the end of the litigation, the risks you take, what's involved in it. So there's a lot more to a lawsuit than what you see a lot of times and what everybody wants to make you to believe. So it's important that you listen to the show because if you want to know about lawsuits, if you want to know about what happens if you get hurt in an accident, because it's good to know what you do at the very beginning all the way through.
Well, it is, Brad. And another thing that we talked about yesterday, which was kind of unusual, that we took a part of our show yesterday that's going to air tomorrow morning on a variety of stations and next week on a variety of stations in the mountains. We talked about from the perspective of the at-fault party. I mean, usually you're going after the at-fault party, which is really just going after their insurance company. You don't go after them. But from their perspective, how it works for them and what they need to know and what they need to say and do about their own insurance company. That's a flavor that we've not engaged in much.
All right, Gary, you got Martin on line one. Martin, you have a question about petty theft?
No, it was a petty two class offense. I'm calling on behalf of a friend of mine. He's at work at 7, so he asked me to call in for him. And it was a running dog at large citation, actually 3 counts here in Boulder County. And he's wondering whether or not he waived his right to a jury trial because he appeared for arraignment a couple months ago. And he asked for a continuance before at his appearance rather than enter a plea. And the county court judge granted his continuance so he could seek legal counsel. And when he did, of course, he found legal counsel was charging a minimum of $5,000 just to take his case. It was prohibitive.
Okay, now you said all He entered his appearance, and all he did was ask for a continuance.
A continuance, and he didn't enter a plea.
Yeah, normally you don't have to request a jury trial until you enter your plea.
Okay, that's what he did. Then about a month or two later, he reappeared and entered his plea of not guilty. But right in the same breath, he requested from the podium a jury trial on this matter. And the judge shot him down and said, no, your time has expired to request a jury trial. It's going to be a bench trial.
Is it in municipal court, Boulder Municipal Court?
No, it's in county court, I believe, since he lives in the mountains.
That's very rare. I'd like to find out what happened when he asked for the continuance, if he did something there. Because normally it's when you enter your plea and you have to pay your jury fee, but you're entitled to a jury when you're entering your plea to get a jury trial.
Yeah, which I'm familiar with. And he just verbally stated to the court a request for a jury trial, and no one's put his jury demand in then. And the judge said, no, I'm not going to allow that because the time has expired. Then he researched and found out he had like 21 days, he believed,
right,
to request this jury trial. Now he's about a month away from trial, and he's wondering whether or not he can submit a motion to reconsider the judge's ruling, because he's getting a transcript of that judge's hearing where the judge denied him a jury trial.
Well, I think he can. The thing is that it's going to matter a lot on the time, but I think he's probably still got the opportunity to be able to ask the court and tell the court he'd like a jury trial, tender a jury fee. Right now, unless there's something if we're talking county court in Boulder, I'm very surprised that when he's entering his plea, he's not getting his jury trial. So the best we can do on that one, Martin, is we got to sit down and talk to the guy and discuss and find out what happened, maybe get the transcripts, and we can help him towards.
Yeah, I was just wondering whether or not he could give your office a call sometime this week.
Absolutely.
And you could just, he's very articulate. He's well-schooled. In other words, he just doesn't feel that he would not get a fair shake before the bench, since a lot
right.
of those judges.
Well, you know, I think Brad raised the right issues. It seems strange to me as well that somehow he waived his jury trial. So I think we need to look at the details.
Something's wrong. Something's wrong. Even the fact pattern or how the law was applied, because I can tell you right now, in the day, I did a lot of cases, a lot of misdemeanor cases that were in the different county courts. And, when you ask for a continuance, that's one thing. But when you, and I always ask for a jury when I enter my appearance, but when you're entering that plea is when the golden time period starts to run. So I'd like to find out what's happening on his case.
Okay, if you don't mind, he could just give you a call sometime next week.
Yeah, Martin, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put you on hold and want you to give Kevin the guy's name. And tell him to ask for me so we can figure it out.
Oh, Kevin, okay.
Yeah.
I appreciate it,
yeah,
guys.
Tell Kevin the name, but tell your friend to ask for me so I can figure it out, okay?
Well, I appreciate it, Brad.
All right, buddy.
You doing okay, Gary?
Doing great. Hey, we got a break coming up, but right after the break, I'm going to ask everybody a question on Double Jeopardy, because it just raced through my mind when you were on the phone asking about the jury trial. Double Jeopardy, when does it attach? When does
Thanks
it attach?
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later, Martin. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We got Robert, who has a question, and Robert will get to you right after the commercial break. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Give us a call, 303-713-8255. We'll be right back. There's too much confusion.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, you can call our show, ask us any legal question on any subject, 303-713-8255. We're here for you. We are injury attorneys in our day lives, but right here for this show, we'll answer your question and solve your problems on any legal subject. And don't forget about our series that we're in the middle of right now. It's called Back to the Basics, Car Accidents and Injuries. The ABCs of car accidents, what you need to know. That we got our second part of our series airing tomorrow morning. on a variety of stations, and then next weekend in the mountain stations. So it's very important. And then yesterday we did a little bit different twist. Brad and I took it from the perspective of the at-fault party. We usually have the perspective or the take from the injured victim because that's what we do. But what about the at-fault party and how does this really work? And Brad is so right. Many times on these, you hear all these television ads and all these million-dollar judgments and verdicts and recoveries. Well, that's got a lot of story to it. And you know, just because you got rear-ended doesn't mean that. But what it does mean, as Brad pointed out earlier, is that you need to understand the rules. You need to have legitimate, fair compensation by the insurance company. And a lot of people tell us, well, you know, Gary, Brad, I'm the injured one here. I thought the other person had insurance. Why aren't they paying? And you need to listen to these shows. So, Brad, we got Robert.
We sure do, Gary. Robert's online, too. Robert, how you doing, buddy?
Good. A couple questions just on what you just said. How does it determine the depth of the lawsuit? I mean, financially or logically, is it filed or can the county require it go to arbitration before a lawsuit? I mean, there are so many that are filed that are so trivial as far as I'm concerned. I mean, and the court can't decide at the time they're filed.
Robert, the courts have a great deal of latitude on whether or not they can require mediation before you go to before you start a trial. Obviously, when a lawsuit comes in, normally what happens, the lawyer takes the information and contacts the adjuster from the insurance company to see if they can resolve the case short of filing a lawsuit before you even file the complaint.
What about person to person? Is that different then? I mean, filing suit against the neighbor, I mean, how do you decide what's going on there?
Well, unfortunately, when you file a lawsuit against somebody, normally that person has insurance of one kind or another. Neighbor will have homeowner's insurance, car will have car insurance, and that gets turned over to the insurance company. You're dealing with adjusters for the insurance company.
Oh, okay.
You're lucky if you can get the adjusters to appear for the mediation, even at times when it's court-ordered. You almost have to go in and get a special order from the court. And a lot of times the courts will not require the adjusters to appear at the mediation. The adjusters will be working out of another state. Remember, a lot of insurance companies, their adjusting offices are not located in the state of Colorado. So they're in another state entirely. Gary and I, prefer that the adjusters be told they must come to the mediation. We feel if an insurance company does business in the state of Colorado, if it's writing policies in the state of Colorado, if it's dealing with the lives of our Colorado citizens and people who are going to be paying the price for the negligence of a person here in the state of Colorado, that the insurance company should have adjusters here that can come to the mediations. But sometimes the courts will require it. Other times the courts don't. So you could have an adjuster sitting out in Connecticut trying to deal with the settlement on a mediation where the plaintiff, the injured party, and the plaintiff's lawyer have had to go downtown and get into an office with a mediator or settlement judge, and they're having to be there face-to-face. The lawyer for the insurance company will show up, but the adjuster who makes all the decisions will be sitting out in Connecticut doing who knows what.
What about time limits, and does it have to all be on paper, or can it be verbal with the plaintiff and the respondent?
Well, you asked the right attorneys on that one. Brad had a case that went all the way to the Colorado Supreme Court, on settlements, and take it away, Brad.
Well, you know, the time limits you're talking about is the courts nowadays, we had some new rules come into effect recently, and the courts nowadays have placed a situation where normally they want the mediation or the settlement conference to occur anywhere from 3 to 4 months before trial. That can cause a problem because you have to do discovery, and a lot of times you have to learn what the different experts, the doctors and the accident reconstructionists, the economists and those type people are going to say about the case. So, you know, you've got this problem of trying to learn what they're saying. In Colorado, we don't have to, as plaintiffs, we don't have to give our expert witness reports till 126 days prior to trial, and defense doesn't have to give theirs till 98 days prior to trial. So if you're doing a mediation prior to those days, prior to that 4 months when you give the expert reports and 3 months when you give the expert reports, you don't know what they're going to say. So you're kind of guessing what the case might be worth. Other times you get a couple of months before trial, you know what the case is worth, but of course then you spend a lot of time and money getting the case ready. So,
and Brad's exactly right, Robert, because look at this example here. If you know, and Brad said you don't have to designate your experts. What that means is in a trial you have to put in writing that your experts, doctors, are eight doctors, two doctors, three doctors, orthopedic surgeon, neurologist, whatever, are going to testify and their reports are attached. Because if you don't get to that point, then the other side, the defense and the insurance company say, well, we really don't know. We can't evaluate this case. We can't put any money on this case. We can't because we don't know. We don't know. We don't know. And so the mediation has to come at a pretty good time when everybody's informed about the other side's case.
How does the jury determine awards? That's another good question.
Well, that is a great question.
Let me take that one on here a second because, you know, you get a jury verdict, and a jury deliberations is I think, fascinating. I've tried to interview every juror or most jurors after every trial I've had in my career. Sometimes they don't want to talk, which we honor. Sometimes they do. Sometimes one of them will talk to you. But they engage in this pretty heated discussion many times because most of them become friends in this days on end that they're a jury, but they can have very heated discussions because somebody wants to go one way, somebody wants to go the other. But I'll tell you what, in Colorado, quotient verdicts are not proper, meaning, well, let's just all write down a number. If there's six jurors, let's all write down a number and let's just divide it by six. Not that that doesn't happen because nobody really gets into the jury room. But juries, you know, they go on the facts. Sometimes they want to re-see or rehear evidence that was done in the trial. That's up to the judge. Sometimes they want to ask questions in their deliberations. That's up to the judge as well.
What a mess.
Well, you know, it sounds like a mess. And, you know, I guess we could say it's a mess. But really, overall, if the jury system is not being abused by people trying to create fodder or advertising, and they're not doing things that they're inappropriately using the jury system for, it's not a mess. The juries tend to give fair verdicts. Have the juries at times gone overboard one way or the other? Yeah, but basically, I have a lot of faith in juries. It's amazing what six people, when you're doing civil cases, you're six people. Federal criminal cases are 12 people. But when they listen to what's being said. A lot of times, what upsets me is what we're not allowed to tell the juries. Sometimes jurors are misled, thinking this poor defendant's going to be paying this money when actually it's the insurance company paying it. And a jury's not supposed to be deciding a case based on sympathy. And so they shouldn't be saying this poor defendant. They should just be determining what the appropriate amount of the verdict is.
Are the attorneys allowed to address the jury to try to slant the jury one way or another? I mean, basically the attorney's playing to the jury?
Well, yeah. Sure. I mean, that's who you're trying to convince. That's who you're trying to persuade. But I want to go back to a point Brad just raised a minute ago because it's so important. Most people don't understand. You're in a jury trial. There's the plaintiff and there's the defendant. The defendant usually is an individual sitting over here. And there's no mention of insurance. The jury never knows, is never told that the defendant over here has insurance. They want the jury to think that this poor defendant, as Brad just said, has to pay all this money out of their pockets, so we better not award X or Y or Z, because most of the cases, 99% of the injury cases that go to trial, there is insurance involved. You just can't mention it in trial. And most jurors ask those questions in trial. What about insurance? And it goes on and on.
And once again, it's not prejudice, but what you want to do is you want to make sure a jury's not making a decision based on passion or based on any kind of sympathy, because that's not what they're supposed to do. A jury's supposed to sit there, listen to the case, determine who's responsible for what and what the total amount of damages are. Now, Robert, when I say this, you could take a case. This is the honest God truth. You could take a case and walk into a courtroom and seat three different juries and do the same exact case to all three juries, and you're probably going to come out with three different results, and chances are at least two of them are going to be very opposite ends of the system. We deal with people on what their previous experiences are, what their feelings are, what they, well, how much do you value a person not being able to do things that they used to do? How much do you value a person being having back pain for the rest of their lives? Well, some jurors don't think that's worth anything. Other jurors think that's worth a lot of money.
What determines whether they can have a trial jury first before they go to court?
You have to ask for the jury.
You just have to make a jury demand. But if you don't make the jury demand in writing, it kind of relates to Martin's question earlier. If you don't make a jury demand in writing, you don't get a jury. You get a bench trial.
Then it's going to be a bench trial.
Oh, I see.
Right.
So it's a, you know, as a matter of fact, Gary, we ought to talk more about this. We got to go to break now. But Robert, thank you. We'll talk more about it. And listen, we'll talk about when we can actually address the jury and when we talk to them. All right?
Always do. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
You're listening to the Bell and Polk Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. We do have some lines open, so call us, 303-713-8255. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here to answer your questions on any legal topic. Feel free to give us a call. We'll be right back.
Kind. We answer legal questions. This is a law show. It's a law talk show, not a political show. Our telephone number, 303-713-8255. I'm in Steamboat Springs today. Brad's in Denver. The number in the mountains is 970-457-1009. And right now we got Eric, I think, Brad.
Hello, guys.
Eric.
Yes.
What's going on at Caitlin's today?
Hey, how are you? Good. We got
good.
Going on. Run some specials by you for the week. Our breakfast special is a little different. We're calling it pancake dippers. Now, what that is we're taking our hardwood smoked bacon, we're dipping it in our scratch-made buttermilk pancake batter, and we're grilling that up, putting that on this grill, grilling brown. It's really, really good. Serve that with some maple syrup. That's going to be our breakfast special, pancake dippers. Don't forget. And our lunch special is going to be a Southwestern salad. Now, that's a chicken breast that I've marinated in a cilantro lime vinaigrette. We're going to chop that up, put it on a bed of greens with some bell peppers, some black beans, some kernel corn, chopped avocado. Really, really good stuff. You can even use that vinaigrette as a dressing on that as well. And don't forget, on Mondays and Fridays from 11 to 2, every Monday, every Friday from 11 to 2, it's all you can eat. Taco burrito buffet, it's all you can eat. It's only $7.99. That includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. And we're skating by with one more decent weekend, it looks like, for the weekend. We're going to have our umbrellas up. We're going to have bottomless mimosas for $10. So all kinds of things to come check out at Caitlin's. Please come down and check us out. Have a good time with us.
Eric, where are you located?
We're 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's the Glendale Shopping Center.
Eric, you got those TVs on for the games?
The TVs are on. They're ready to go. Sports Center's on. ESPN is on. Ready to rock.
Good. I always want to make sure I get that early game when I go down there.
Yeah, absolutely. They're on.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
You know, I'm thinking you can go down there and watch the game, any game that they've got on or request that they put a game on, and you get pancake dippers. Wow.
Yeah, that sounds like something worth going down and checking out.
I think it does. Brad, let's talk about jury trials a second. And we were going to do this right after the break anyway. So when do attorneys get to address the jury and talk to them as opposed to, you know, here's a witness and the witness is testifying and that sort of thing?
Yeah. You know, Robert asked some good questions and he was talking about when you get to talk to the jury. And that's why we're talking about the ABCs of trial, because people have to understand what trials are about. And there's more behind it. But just basically when you're going into court, you're going to be talking to the jury actually three main times. Now, everything, not everything, but most everything is said in front of a jury. Now, there are times when you approach the court and the court will put on this noise to make sure the jury doesn't hear what you're talking about. There are times when the court's going to have hearings and is going to discuss things outside the presence of the jury. And that's to make sure the jury doesn't hear things that by law they're not allowed to hear. But on the reverse side, there's very much three times you get to talk to a jury, and one time is during voir dire, and that's at the very beginning when you're deselecting the jury or when you're selecting the jury. Courts have different ways to do this, but normally what they're going to do is they're going to call people into the jury box. Like I said, in most civil cases, you're going to be talking six jurors and probably one alternate. If it's a long case, you may have two or three alternates. If it's a short case, you'll have one alternate. Sometimes they go with none, but rarely, because if you lose a juror, then it's a mistrial. So the jurors are going to be in the jury box, and you're going to voir dire them. And you're going to ask them questions to learn about them and determine whether or not these are people who might relate to your client. And Gary, you know what the problems are with that.
Yeah, right. So, you know, the attorneys get to ask questions. Both sides, both attorneys on either side, plaintiff and defendant, get to ask questions of the jurors. And sometimes they can seem like, to the juror, a pretty personal question. But the purpose of that part of the trial is to find out who you are as Mr. and Mrs. Juror. What do you believe in on certain subjects? Could you be a fair and impartial juror in this particular trial? That sort of thing. The next time the attorneys get to address the jury is what's called opening argument or opening statement. Some people don't like the word opening argument, but opening statement as to what happens, what the evidence is going to show in this case, and inform the jury exactly what basically a summary of what the witnesses are going to say and do. So that, and Robert was asking us that question. And he says, Brad, then why don't you talk about closing argument? That's the third time basically that the attorneys get to stand in front of the jury, talk to the jury, and tell them what the case is about.
Now, that probably should not be termed a closing statement. That really is a closing argument.
Correct.
You know, at the beginning of the case, that opening statement that the court likes to call it is a situation where you're explaining what your case is about or what you're going to be telling the jury. At the end of the case, you're arguing, you're discussing, you're telling the jury what the evidence has produced, how the evidence supports your case. You're also telling the jury how the evidence doesn't support the other side's case. You're telling the jury and giving some suggestions about what you think the case is worth. You're discussing with the jury why you think your case is worth what it is, and you're discussing the jury why the liability is on your side and how the jury should look at the case. Once again, you've got preconceived notions and beliefs that you're a lot of times dealing with. You may have brought in, or somebody may have brought in an accident reconstructionist to go over how the accident happened, but jurors sometimes don't really care what they said. They've got their own idea after they hear what the eyewitnesses said about the case. The jury is instructed in jury instructions that they can believe all, part, or none of what a witness says. So when a witness gets up on the stand and starts talking about what they believe in or what they gives their evidence, a jury can very well just ignore it.
Right. You know, and I think Robert raised a good question earlier in his comment on the show. Is that, quote, it sounds like a mess. Well, jury trials and trials are very tough. They're very detailed. They're very complicated. And so any person that's injured, you need to go to an attorney that tries to avoid going to trial, tries to get your case resolved without filing a lawsuit. But as I said many times, let's say you're injured. Let's say your medical bills are $25,000. Your medical bills are only part of what you can claim in a case. Let's say your medical bills are $25,000 and the insurance company for the at-fault party says, we're going to pay you $11,000, period, paragraph, take it or leave it, goodbye. And that forces you then to file a lawsuit. I don't think many people understand that. I think people think or believe that somebody gets injured, they go to an injury lawyer, and you just file a lawsuit. File a lawsuit, and we get a verdict, and we do all this. Or we recovered $3.2 million. You know, that's so far away from the way this thing really works. And you never get to hear or know about the fact that the insurance company only offered $11,000 on $25,000 in medical bills, and this person is going to have surgery. And they say, we don't care. We don't care about you. We're not going to do that. That forces you to file the lawsuit. And then the insurance company says, well, the injured person, they're just greedy. And the plaintiff's lawyers, they're all greedy. Everybody's greedy but the insurance company. And a lot of this cannot be explained to a jury. They don't see it. They don't hear it. All they know is that they're in trial. All they know is that this person is wanting to be compensated for their injuries. And then they listen to the medical evidence. So it's you need attorneys that give you a legal game plan. Bell and Pollock can do that. We have a trademark legal game plan based on our over 30 years each experience. We can put it to work for you. But you must have ones that do it. And by the way, you can't just quote value. You know, what's my case worth? You know, I met with some people yesterday in Steamboat Springs, and that was one of the questions. What's my case worth? And the answer is, I don't know. And they look at you kind of crazy. You're an attorney. Why don't you know? Because what does the medical evidence show? What are your injuries? Are you going to have future surgery? Are you dealing with a drunk driver? What's your legal game plan? And on and on. So for lawyers to say, well, your case is worth X or Y or Z, and we're just going to go to trial, we're just going to file a lawsuit, that's not the way it works or should work.
Sure. You know, and that's one of the things that worries me at times is the people the trend in advertising seems to be to be talking about how great you are and how well you get your success. And I think advertising people say, you know, show where you've had success, but they tend to make it seem like it's easy. Like, you're going to get it. You know, they called me on the weekend and I called them on the weekend. I got $100,000. You didn't get it on the same weekend. I promise you that. You know, that didn't happen. You know, they complain, you know, oh, you have to prove this, you have to prove that. Yeah, that's how the system works. So yeah, right. The negligent driver may have been negligent, but yes, you have to prove your case. And that's something you should do. So-and-so got me $2 million. So-and-so got me $1 million, or, you know, well, this is what cases are about, is valuing the case after you learn what the case is about. And being able to deal with it, and know how you're going to present it to the jury, and get a fair evaluation, and then once you value what the case is about, you got to go back and look at where the assets are to pay for that judgment, because that may not be there.
Yeah, that, when we're talking about insurance coverages and insurance policies, and you know, sometimes the other side, they don't tell you all the insurance. They don't tell you there's an umbrella policy. They just say there's a $50,000 or $25,000 policy, and that's not true. And we've done shows exactly on finding insurance coverage for your client, finding all the appropriate insurance coverages for your client. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. If you want any of our free books, go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You can download them there. You can order a hard copy. All you have to do is call Kevin. And you can call us right now with any questions you have. This is a Law Talk show. Our telephone number is 303-713-8255. We have lines that are open. We'll be right back.
Dean will be right with you, buddy.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. I'm Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. We have offices in Greenwood Village, Denver, and Steamboat Springs. And I'm sitting right here in beautiful Steamboat Springs. Brad's got the anchor in Denver. We're ready to answer your calls, 303-713-8255. Brad, I understand we got some calls.
We sure do. We got Dean has a question about juries, and then we'll talk to Mr. Quintana. But Dean, what do you got, buddy?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I suppose you guys probably read about a judge up in Weld County. His name's Todd Taylor. He overturned his own decision to accept a case and retry a case of a airplane accident at the Erie Air Park.
Yes,
remember that?
Yep, sure did.
Five people were killed.
Yep.
I sat through a couple days of that trial. And I found it fascinating, and I think that when they were trying the case, the NTSB had not ruled on that case. And I found what's fascinating is after, and the jury, when it was done, five people were dead, and there was two defendants. The jury said, hey, it was a bad accident, but no fault.
Right.
And so nobody got... There was negligence on nobody's part.
Right.
And so they accepted that. I'm sure that the defendants were happy. The plaintiffs were probably upset. And now the plaintiff's attorneys have filed a motion to retry the case, and the judge has accepted it. But this motion came after the NTSB report.
Right.
My question is, why wouldn't the lawyers have waited for the NTSB to do the report before they launched into that case?
Well, that's a great question, because sometimes you have statute of limitations that pushes you to file a lawsuit when you don't really have all the evidence that you want or would like. The other thing is sometimes the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, takes a long time, unknown to us, unknown to you, to render their decision, and then it may or may not be admissible into evidence because of a variety of evidentiary rules. But I think that case you're talking about dealt with an attorney, Oliver Frascona, and the National Transportation Safety Board determined that it was pilot error, his fault for this, the deaths of everybody on board. And so the question is, why wouldn't you wait? Because there might be administrative delays, there might be evidentiary questions. And when the judge grants a new trial and reverses the other one, the jury found XYZ to begin with, or found no fault, but now we've got a new piece of evidence. Now we've got the NTSB evidence, and under Rule 60, you file a motion because there's new evidence. But that's a great question. Why didn't they just wait to begin with?
Now, the other thing about that, here's what happens. Gary said there's a statute of limitations. So, for instance, negligence has a statute of limitations that you have to file your claim. And then the courts now are saying anytime a case gets filed, they want it to get it to trial within 1 year. Our Supreme Court has said most cases, hey, they should get to trial within 1 year of being filed. What happens is the NTSB came out with their decision. Whether or not what Judge Taylor is going to do up there as far as allowing the NTSB decision may be completely different than what they're going to do as far as allowing the NTSB to testify maybe as experts, to have other people say the NTSB is wrong. They may be saying, wait a minute, all you can do is put in the evidence the NTSB had, and somebody else may come to a different decision. Remember at the beginning of the show, I said you can have three juries, and they can all have completely different decisions. Well, consider the NTSB is like a jury. And somebody else may listen to all that evidence and go, no, we don't think there is negligence, although the NTSB does. So
the fascinating part of that case to me, Dean, is this, and you would really ask a great question, thank you, is this. Whenever you have a trial, jury trial or bench trial, there's always a dispute of facts. One party says, no, it was black. The other one says, no, it was white. Black and white, no, it wasn't. Yes, it was. And the judges usually don't interject their own opinion or feelings or decision onto that because there's a factual dispute. And that's what juries decide. Is this side correct or is the other side correct? But in this case, as you're talking about, Judge Taylor basically said, based on the evidence presented at trial, he agreed that the undisputed facts, undisputed, must result in a verdict implicating one or more of the pilots. Somebody was guilty of negligence in that case. And to me, that's the fascinating legal part. Judges can do that, but you just rarely see it because they usually let the juries decide, you know, did somebody run the red light or didn't they run the red light? Was there pilot error or no pilot error? And that's the fascinating part to me.
Well, watching, I told you I sat through a couple, that was about a week-long trial. I sat through a couple days of it. The lawyers on both sides were demonstrating and trying to educate the jury on how an airplane even flies, how a propeller works, what a stall is, this, that, and the other thing, airspeed, and yada, yada. What they had done is put the jury, in my opinion, they put the jury in a position of being the NTSB, a finder of fact of the accident. And the jury didn't even know how an airplane flies.
Well, yeah, and you know, I can't second guess because I didn't see the trial about why they were doing what they were doing. They both decided what they wanted to do. But in that case, if I remember right, they said, look, somebody was negligent. But even the defense said, the defendants were saying somebody was negligent. And well, the jury came back and said no one was negligent.
Bruce Lampert was the plaintiff's attorney.
Right.
And his closing argument said, there's five people that died here. We don't care who you decide is its fault. But the five people that are dead, the four of them are my clients, and they didn't have anything to do with this accident. So we don't care how you find at fault. Either the guy taken off, his name was Joe, he was taken off, and Oliver was coming in. We don't care how you guys decide, but it's somebody's at fault because we got four dead, innocent people.
Right, right.
And the jury said, hey, it's, you know, nobody's fault, no negligence.
Well, and that's what they do. First, they decide who's liable and are they liable, and then secondly, are there any damages that we need to award money on? But once again, so the judge ruled that the undisputed facts, undisputed, key word, because if there's a dispute on facts, somebody says it was something was black, somebody said it was white. If there's a dispute on the facts, the judge has usually let the jury's decision prevail, irrespective of whether the judge agrees. But in this case, the judge says there's undisputed facts, which means nobody came forward and disputed these facts, X, Y, Z. Nobody came forward and disputed anything.
That negligence was involved. The judge said they just didn't pick somebody. And the jury, I think, said nobody gave us a good enough reason to pin it on anybody. But the bottom line is the case was about negligence. That has pretty much been admitted. The only question is who was negligent and what and who caused the accident.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll see on part two of the next case. We'll see what happens.
Make sure you call us when you hear it, Dean.
Yeah, and Dean, that's a great example of why you need to try everything you can as an attorney to avoid going to trial, get the best result for your client, but sometimes you have to do it.
Well, here, and I'll let you go. You know, the NTSB pointed the finger at Oliver for bad piloting.
Right.
Now, Joe was brought in as a co-defendant. Do you think that Joe will be named in the second case?
Yes.
Yes.
I think so, too. And we'll talk about it next week. We got to go this week. Mr.
Thanks.
Quintana, we're going to call you off the air. We're sorry we couldn't get you on the air. You're listening to the Bell and Polk Legal Show. Gary, you want to take us out of this?
Yeah, you betcha. Go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information-loaded website. You get any of our books for free. A lot of information. Our podcasts are on there, our audio podcasts. Our podcasts of all of our shows, including this show, will be loaded on there. Give us a call. Go to championsofthepeople.com because we are your champions of the people.